This is the Andy Social Podcast. My name is Andy Dowling. And, hello. How you doing? Thank you very much for sacrificing an hour or so of your precious and valuable week of hustle and bustle to listen to my angelic voice and the voice of this week's guest. Speaking of, 102 of the podcast features Cindy Sin. Cindy, I've known for quite a few years. He's played in a bunch of bands in Sydney. Lords played with one of Cindy's previous bands, Lust, who we, I think we played in Sydney, Canberra, and a couple of shows in Hobart as well, of all places, which are a little bit hazy, but the memories are fond and a lot of fun times. So recently I caught up with Cindy in his studio, which is freaking amazing, and we'll get to that shortly, in the inner west of Sydney in Newtown. He shares this this compound, compound being the best word, probably, this compound with the Young Henry's guys, who are a craft brewery in Sydney, great beer, by the way, and he's got this great arrangement with them. He's got his own studio, which he... I guess, what does he do? He outsources it out to other artists and they share the rent, and they've got this great communal space where they all work. It's sort of like, kind of like a, well, not really a hot desk arrangement, but it's just this great place where they can all work together and do their own things, but they've got this communal spot to do their thing. Wow, that's a great explanation, Andy. Well done. Anyway, Cindy has been going from strength to strength over the last few years. He is an amazing artist. I should actually get to the chase of what he is doing. He is a musician, but Cindy's best known for his incredible art. He has done art through the majority of the inner west of Sydney. If you've frequented any of the pubs or any of these establishments in the inner west, no doubt you probably would have seen a little bit of Cindy's artwork around. If you've had any of the Young Henry's products, you may have seen Cindy's work being associated with some of that stuff as well. He's done artwork for bands. He's done tour posters. He's done stuff with so many different businesses, stuff like Universal Records. He's done stuff with the Misfits, Creator, a whole bunch of different things. And we'll get into that in this episode. Cindy has also launched a kids clothing line called Nightcrawler Co. So that's really cool. We've got links of that in the show notes and we talk about that. And he is also one of the people behind Death Patches. So if you're aware of Death Patches, then you may not be aware because Cindy doesn't make a big point of it, but he is behind that as well. So lots of cool things that Cindy's involved with. I'm going to let him explain it because, as always, the guest explains themselves far better than I do. So I'll leave that all to Cindy. But everything we speak about is in the show notes over at andysocial.net. So make sure you go over there, check it out. Especially if you got a newborn on the way, if you got whatever you call them, those baby things, you can tell I haven't got kids, but if you got one of those little things and you want to dress it up with some cool clothes, then I think Nightcrawler might be your way to go. So I'm going to put links over to andysocial.net. So make sure you check that out. And yes, everything else will be over there. So as always, enough of my crapping on. Please enjoy this episode with Cindy Sin. How you doing?
I'm very well. How you doing?
Yeah, good. Do you want to explain our surroundings? I know you already have, but...
I can explain this. We're at Snake Eyes Studios,
yes.
My art studio in Newtown. We are essentially a sun-filled cubby house inside the Young Henry's Beer Brewery.
Sounds like heaven.
It's pretty good. We've already had two beers without even meaning to. We've just blinked and had two beers.
Oh, it's way too easy. And it's a nice day as well.
Totally. Yeah. Can you imagine how distracting it is to work here, knowing that downstairs is a fountain? A fountain of beer? But somehow we still get stuff done.
That's pretty cool. It's almost like one of those trendy hot desk sort of
Like
setups
Google.
That you've got here.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But for artists, and so you got a number of guys that all work
here? There's six of us up here. We're all freelance. We're all doing our own thing. We're all our own boss, which means there's no rules. There's no HR department.
Oh,
so we
refreshing.
We play whatever music we want. We speak and say as we feel. We actually do on the one wall here is a chalkboard wall.
Oh, yep.
Down the other end there. You can probably see it. We've got incidents of sexual harassment. That was our way of implementing some order.
Yep, nice. You got to have some foundation.
Benny's winning.
Even if it's loose.
Benny's in the lead.
Oh, no. Very cool. So you're running this operation as far as Snake Eye Studios?
More or less. I mean, in that, like, we don't all work as an agency or anything like that. So I'm not, you know, I'm just responsible for the space.
Yeah.
But we set it up about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And we've been here almost every day since.
So how'd you nab this? How'd you nab this place?
Oh, you got to know a guy.
Within the Young Henry's compound.
So the Young Henry's compound down here, it started as a quarter block, and they've just kind of slowly taken over the whole suburb. And when it was expanding, they had this spare space, and we were looking for a space, and it was just the right time at the right place. And obviously, Oscar helped us out a big time with the shoe-in.
Yep.
I think we're part of the family now.
That's pretty cool.
That's good.
Who was here before Young Henry's moved in?
I'm not sure. We get a lot of mail from them for
just random
different
guys.
Bills and stuff. We usually keep it aside for about 6 months, and then we go, oh, they don't want these bills. No one wants bills. We just put it in the bin for them.
It's pretty cool here. It's like a really, like, dude, I'm just looking out the window now, and you got the Young Henry's entrance to their beer garden. You can go and get
there's trucks and dogs. Look at that.
Trucks and dogs and barbecue.
A couple of dudes in denim standing around. They're probably talking about a bit of culture and stuff, you know. Look at them.
Oh, yeah.
Look at
them
go.
He's got a denim jacket, a double denim. Oh, what a legend.
Yeah, he's doing it.
Anyway.
Living the dream.
Getting distracted. Fuck, a few things have changed over the years then.
They have.
I mean,
I went from working a job and playing in bands and sort of dreaming of somehow making a living out of artwork to now doing that every day.
So, I guess earlier in the piece, I mean, you were doing art for the bands that you're playing in.
Yeah.
Sort of mates as well.
Yeah, it was quite local. It was like, you know, just literally just a few mates that knew I could draw who just wanted a gig poster really fast.
Yeah.
I didn't have an efficient process. I didn't really know how much to charge. And like some of the first gig posters I did were like $50 gig posters, you know. And I remember one of the first bands I worked for gave me a tip and they paid $60.
Oh,
and I was stoked. And I've come a long way since then. I mean, I still get excited when they tip $10, but
yeah.
You know, I've come a long way from working with mates and trying to figure it out to now having an efficient process, having a client base, having a system for things, promoting myself, the whole thing.
And was that only when you came here that sort of changed, or had you already been on your way before you got into this space?
So I was working full time at APRA AMCOS.
Yep.
I was looking after independent bands recording covers.
Yep.
I seem to remember your applications coming across my desk a few times. Some Kylie Minogue covers.
That's right. Yeah. Integral part of the process.
Yep. Yep. Big business. And we, I went part time there because I wanted to spend, like, I was basically working all night.
Yep.
I'd come home, I'd finish my work at 5. I'd come home and I'd work from 6 until I could no longer stay awake working on stuff. And I'd go back to work and I'd be exhausted and I'd have a nap at lunch and I'd go home and do it again. And eventually I went to my boss and just said, I need to go part-time. This is too hard. I've got an opportunity to kind of, you know, kind of build this into a thing. And he said, sure, go for it. Let's see how it goes. Gave it a trial period. Made sure I still got all my work done. But it was obviously, like, once you start putting more time into something that you're passionate about and you give a shit about and, like, you know, you've actually got a little bit of opportunities start to come up and you've got some time to kind of put into it, the momentum starts to build. And then after about 6 months of being part-time, I just went to him and said, I've got to get out of this. Like, I need every day of the week to work on all of this stuff that's coming up. And it was really exciting. And I remember, like, going to my boss and saying that, being like, I got to go. Like, this is it. Pulling the pin. And being, like, terrified that, you know, walking out the door, being like, now what?
You don't have the safety net anymore of having an employer.
Totally. And you feel like a sense of freedom and a sense of, like, pants-shitting terror at the same time. You know, like, it's motivating to know that, like, when you wake up in the morning, the only way you're going to be able to pay your bills at the end of the week is if you get a bunch of shit done.
That's it. It's all on you.
Yeah,
it's not even a case that you can walk in the door to an office and just cruise through the day and someone pays you.
Yeah. But I think there's an illusion that, like, you, when you work for yourself, that you, you know, my mates reckon that I just wake up whenever I feel like it, go to the beach, and then have a couple beers and a sandwich, and then like come in here and like flick some paint around and express my feelings, and then like turn my computer off and go home. When you work for yourself, like every second of the day is spent. Like I'm very obsessive. I'm a workaholic, yep. And I enjoy what I do, and I want to do a good job. Yep. So like, I actually almost feel guilty when I'm not working. So going to the beach is quite hard. You know,
like it's stopping.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Like I want to get shit done. I want to do a really good job. And if I've got 2 days to work on a project, I want to spend every second of that time working on it, so that when I send it, the client gets really fucking excited by it. Right. Am I allowed to swear?
Yes.
Oh, good. Great.
Imagine if there was no swearing policy on this podcast. It'd be really awkward.
Yeah, good. Yeah, well, fuck yeah, great. Just spending all my time working on projects is satisfying, because when I send it over and a client gets jazzed on it, that makes me feel good, and that's like the satisfaction that I get out of the job. That's half the reason why I do this, because it makes, I enjoy it.
In that 6 months from where you went part-time to where you just let go of that job, what was the... Was there anything in particular? Was there a client or a project that you had a sniff at where you thought, nah, I've got to be all in on this?
Yes and no. There were clients that you learn a lot when you start working for yourself. You realize certain clients, certain jobs, certain whatever. You start to recognize the red flags, what's a waste of time, what's not right.
Yeah.
Which that can happen in any industry. But I had a couple of jobs that I nailed, and it led to 100 more jobs. I started working with a bar around here called Mary's, who've been massively supportive of me. One of my longest standing and drunkest clients. But we do a lot of fun work together, and that was a job that just really helped me have a bit of an identity in this, in Newtown, in the town, and in the community. And the other job that really opened up a lot of doors was doing a gig poster with the Misfits.
Yeah.
And so when they came out here, I had the opportunity to do some limited edition screen prints that were going to be available on the merch desk. It tied in with a meet and greet they were doing. The poster's sold out. You know, they're on a couple of hundred people's walls.
That's cool.
Which is pretty rad, you know? Awesome. And that means that, I'm a fan of the Misfits.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the Danzig Misfits, but, I'm a fan of the Misfits.
Yeah, that's it.
And, that was really satisfying to, be a part of that, and to feel like, oh, you know what, I'm a part of their history. Like, if they put out a book, I could be in that book.
Yeah.
And that's quite strange, because it kind of breaks that barrier of bands being, I don't know, like these weird sort of celebrities that come into your town and play songs without ever knowing you, and they affect your whole life, and you never get to meet them or interact. I mean, you can yell at them on Twitter, but that's
what I do.
Yeah, you gotta
acknowledge me. Yeah, I exist.
Totally. That's your Twitter, right?
That's it. Yeah.
Speak up.
It's that's crazy. I mean, imagine I can only begin to imagine what that would feel like, especially them playing in Sydney, and then potentially people that you know being at the show. And then seeing your artwork there associated with that band, surreal.
Yeah. It's very strange. It's very surreal. It's very I don't know how to explain the feeling of seeing someone walk down the street wearing a t-shirt that I've drawn. Like it's quite exciting, and on the other hand, I kind of look at it and I go, oh yeah, I remember doing that. Like that was, I stayed up really late to get that one done or whatever. But it's definitely it's pleasing. I like it.
So things like that. Was the Misfits around that period of time?
In that sort of it was about 6 months to a year of going from part-time to no-time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was one of those jobs that being able to put that up on my website and on my, on Instagram and social stuff.
Yeah.
It just gave my work a credibility that it's not that it didn't have credibility, but it gave it a credibility in potential clients' eyes. Or a local band might have been looking for an illustrator or something, and ultimately all it takes is a bass player to go to his band. There's a guy down the road who just did a poster for the Misfits. He might be cool to do our next thing. And that's the kind of thing where the rest of the band go, the Misfits, I've heard of them, rad. You're like, that's the kind of thing where that's all it takes to get your next job.
That's it, especially if it's a band who they're still trying to get their name out there, and then suddenly they're going to associate themselves with you, who's totally. Associated with the Misfits, and so it's just name totally. Drop central. So it's just so
if you relate it to a band, like a band is going to, when they're describing themselves, if you have to describe your band in two sentences, you're going to talk about the festivals you've played, your sponsorships, your bands you've supported or played mm-hmm. with, collaborations, yep. you know, whatever. You're not going to mention the corporate gig you did at Christmas time for a stupid amount of money to a bunch of people that don't care. You're not going to talk about the shittest gig you played where, you know, they put the wrong date on the poster or something. You're not going to talk about the shit ones. You only talk about the good ones. So when jobs like that come up, it changes everything. It opens up a whole bunch of new doors, and suddenly you can actually promote yourself in a really... In a different... It just gives you a different angle. It gives you an extra weapon in your belt. It's good.
So the day after telling your boss, that's it, I'm out, was it a weight off your shoulders, or was it just this anxiety that kicked in going, oh, holy shit, it's on now.
What have I done? Yeah. No, I was nervous, but I was also very excited. I knew that I had clients and jobs lined up.
Yeah.
I knew that I wanted to work on some of my own stuff and kind of keep busy. Like I never had the idea of sitting around doing nothing.
Mm.
So I guess the first thing I did was I went on about a week camping holiday. And it was really nice to have just a minute off and to actually stop and think about what I'm going to do. Camping's quite relaxing, you know, just to go and sit out in the middle of nowhere with a tinny and you go, oh shit, what have I done?
Yeah.
But to then kind of have a starting date and that not
have
be the
game plan.
Yeah. So it was good to then go, you know what, day one I'm working on this, day two I'm working on this, day three I'm going to email these people. And like, I really like drumming up work. I find it's a nice feeling when someone gets back to you going, actually, yeah, you know what, let's do a shirt together, or let's do a thing, come and paint a mural, come and do this. And it's like, it's that same thing as seeing someone walk down the street with your, you know, with your artwork on their shirt. You just go like, oh, it's good, this bar believes that I can do it, let's do it.
Do you think, looking back, it was a pretty easy transition, or was it a bit fucked at times as far as wondering whether you made the right decision or not?
I've never regretted it. I've never had a moment of no work or not knowing how I'm going to pay my bills. I've always had more work than I can ever do.
Yeah.
And ever, like in the, that was probably about 4 years ago now, nearly 5 years ago. And I've been flat out. I couldn't be busier.
What's that down to? I mean, you could say your skill and what you produce, but is there...
I think there's a number of things. Like, it's obviously your skill and your talent and your work is a big component. You have to do good work or that's it, game over. But I think the fact that like I do belong to like this nice community, the fact that I've got a good working relationship with a lot of bands, which mean that like, you know, they're doing a tour every year, they're doing a thing every year, they put out a single and they want the album to match the singles, and then they want the merch to match the albums, and then, you know, like you become important in a band's style.
Yep.
Like it actually, my style becomes their style, which is, it's really good for keeping busy.
Absolutely. Do you work out deals with bands in that regard? Like where it's like a package thing where you do a number of different things. It could be t-shirt artwork, album releases, EPs and stuff like that.
I do. Because for like, I guess the easiest way to explain that is that the same amount of work goes into a poster as goes into a t-shirt.
Yep.
A poster has a expiry date. You can only use a post. You can't even post a poster on the internet every day without annoying people. You can really only post it X amount of times before you start pissing people off. Same with putting them down the street. You know, that's expensive.
Yep.
And then after the tour's done, it just becomes like some nostalgic. Oh, like remember how hungover we were after that Hobart show? Ha ha ha. You know, so like
conversation may not have happened. Just
before we but the same amount of work goes into a shirt, and a band can sell a shirt for the rest of their lives and make an income out of their merch. So I can sell shirt artwork for more than I can sell poster artwork for.
Cool.
The usage is like a big component in the cost of artwork. And so if for my time, it's more valuable to be drawing a shirt for me and for the band rather than a poster. But even though like we can use the same artwork on both. And also like, I guess the other thing is that, you know, it's more pleasing to be across the whole range of everything on the, you know, on the poster, on the shirt, on the, you know, banner on their website, on the
it's
everything.
It's a bit of branding for you as well to get totally. your, get your work out there and your name associated with it if it's in more places.
Yeah, it's always nice when the band kind of puts up a thing going like, artwork by Cindy Sin, like, blah, 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 check out his stuff. It's like, I didn't have to do that. Yep. I never ask bands to do that. Yep. I very rarely put my name on artwork unless like, I think they're going to be cool with it. Because ultimately, it's about them. It's about selling shirts, about selling albums. It's not about me.
Yeah.
However, my style is pretty recognizable, so...
It's pretty recognizable.
So, I get, yeah. You know, it is funny to not put my name on things and then get tagged back in it, people who have no idea, so...
Well, I think now... You pretty much painted a large majority of Newtown as far as your yeah. artwork is just everywhere in so many different bars and just places in the area. It's crazy. And then obviously with bands that are associated as well and their artwork is just... And posters like, driving down Parramatta Road or up King Street, then you can just see a poster and it's like, I'm pretty sure that's Cindy.
Yeah.
That has to be his artwork. Yeah.
I think... I don't quite know how to describe my style, but it's just got like a bold, cartoony, kind of melted lava lamp of stuff. You know,
that's
I don't
awesome.
Lots of skulls, mostly skulls.
Was there anybody in particular artistically that you had inspiration from before you started? Was there another artist or anything that you sort of went, that's really cool?
Yeah, I've got lots of... There's lots of artists that inspire me, and for different reasons. Like, it could be that... I usually just only like a little element of how a particular artist works. It could be how they do lettering. It could be how they make like the expression on a character's face look. Like maybe they look really like purposely sad, or like it could be anything. But I mean, obviously there's some massive artists that inspire me. Like I really like Robert Crumb. I really like Coop, who does all the sexy rockabilly devils and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of these things.
Yeah, there's a lot of tattoo artists that I'm inspired by. Kyle Kaufman's a massive one. He lives out west. He's a old school cowboy dude here in Australia who he just nails that lowbrow, you know, hot rods, and you know, it's great. I love all that stuff.
It's a cool style because I think it translates across quite a few different sort of types of people.
My work?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that we're looking around because I've got heaps of stuff here, but like I feel like it's quite flexible. Yeah. And I've found a way of collaborating my style with a brand style. So whether it's Young Henry's here or Mary's up the road or any band that's coming to town, like it means that it's not all about me. It's about how can I adapt what I do to really nail the job.
Yeah. So segue to Young Henry's, and we explained how you set up here. What's the relationship with those guys now?
Well, they've got, I mean, I kind of do most of their collaborative artwork.
Yep.
And one of the really rad things about Young Henry's is they do support a lot of artists and bands and art exhibitions and everything from the local bar to, you know, it could be anything, but they're very, very supportive and they're very, very collaborative. They're flexible with their brand and it means that I get a lot of work out of that. And it means that we're putting out heaps of rad artwork as opposed to, there's a lot of brands and businesses out there that would never let anyone change their logo or even just like redraw their logo. Yeah. Whereas Young Henry's lets me do that every time.
That's cool.
You know, so they'll go, oh, you know what, we're on tap at this new bar, we're doing a shirt and a mural, let's work something out. The bar will give me a brief on what they kind of want. I know what Young Henry's usually wants, and ultimately what Young Henry's gets out of it is a couple little sneaky YHs and a little bit of branding on a bar shirt. You know, it's all about being subtle. You don't want to be the brand that's going, buy me, buy this, do this. Yeah. You know, just the nature of just being casual about it all makes it a casual brand, which much more enjoyable just to be a part of.
I don't even know if it'd be a conscious thing from their point of view. I'm sure there's an element of it, but because you're so, at least from my perspective, you're so ingrained into the inner west music scene and just the culture here as far as your art, and it pops up everywhere. It's so smart of these guys to have you ingrained in what they do, because visually,
oh totally,
they suddenly everyone goes, I like Young Henry's. I probably haven't had their beer, but they seem really cool because aesthetically, when I look
exactly.
at them, it gives a vibe and it gives a...
It's really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And it looks like a gig poster. It looks like a band.
Yeah, it's mad. It's so cool.
You know, it's a really fun way to sell beer.
Has your art made it onto cans yet or onto labels?
I've done a couple of labels and I've done a couple of the tags and stuff. I've never done the tinnies. They usually put the tinnies are usually the core range, which just has the kind of day-to-day branding.
Yep.
But they're starting to put more and more artwork on the tinnies and on the packaging, which is good. There's a couple of artists who work with Young Henry's.
Yep.
I'm not the only one, which is good. It's important to mix it up. It can't all be me.
Yeah.
It's good. And also, I really like the idea of supporting lots of other artists as well. I think if it's all me, then it might get a bit boring.
Yeah.
Whereas everyone's excited to work on the job they're working on.
And it might get to a point where other people externally might not want to work with you because they don't want to be directly associated with Young Henry's because your artwork is just distinctively...
Totally. And that's actually great for me as well, because I'm not just Young Henry's. You know, I we've just said, I'm a freelancer. I work with lots of bars, lots of bands. The fact that I don't work with other beer brands is just something that I choose to do because, you know, I'm one of the boys down here. It's just a nice thing to do.
So, what, 3 or 4 years you've been, or 3 years you've been here?
Almost 4 years.
So, what did I do? I wrote down a whole bunch of notable clients that you've worked for, straight off your Facebook page, of course. So, you mentioned Misfits, CG Ramone, Creator. What did you do for Creator?
Creator, we did some screen printed posters.
Yeah,
for when they came out.
Similar thing to the Misfits.
Yeah, they were playing Manning Bar.
Yep.
I got given full creative control, which was quite strange.
Yeah.
Normally bands would ask for a sketch or something like that. So we just went to town. We just did like a sort of a demonic bull skull, and kind of made it a little bit surfier and a bit funnier. Like not funny, a bit funner than I think they normally would be.
Yeah.
I thought it was a nice difference, and it was actually funny when the promoter put up these are going to be available. There was like 1,000 comments on the poster of people liking the fresh take on Creator and people not liking the fresh take on Creator, which that's what happens with metal music. You can't please everyone. Everyone is so stubborn in what they like and don't like, and they're so vocal about, you know, oh no, this is more California surf metal, you know, like this would suit Anthrax.
Yeah, but not Creator. Yeah, not German thrash metal. I'll have to find a picture of that and I'll chuck it on the page
I've got a signed one over here, which is pretty cool.
Yeah,
I usually get a signed version of it.
Do you know what the band thought of it?
I met them when they were signing it.
Yeah.
And they were like, thanks man, this is rad, this is really cool. But, you know, it was really like, it was a very quick interaction.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were obviously polite, they were stoked. Ultimately, I think they were just happy to have something for the tour. Yeah. Like, it's win-win.
That's it. Absolutely. Yeah. Sydney Comedy Fest, Fringe Fest.
Yep. All the local festivals.
Trop Fest, all the fests.
All the fests. You got to do all the fests.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it comes up.
Yep.
Yeah. I had an installation at the last Vivid Festival, which is pretty fun. We built a haunted house, an underwater-themed haunted house.
Huh.
And we used lights so that, you know, like the old-school 3D glasses that are like red and blue on left and right? So we made it so that the artwork, when the lights were blue, everything was friendly and nice. It was all about this little fish called Catch swimming through the ocean. When the lights were blue, everything was friendly, coral and turtles and nice stuff. And then when the lights went red, just turned into fucking hell with sharks and pirates and all this sort of bad shit.
Was that your concept, or did you sort of help visualize it?
I was part of a team, and the team was responsible for different things, but ultimately the concept and the artwork was mine.
That's cool.
The lighting and the setting up and the paperwork and everything was Oliver Tanner and Mark Dyson, who pulled a lot of late hours to get some pretty fish artwork.
Dyson, why does that name ring a bell?
Oh, he's a cool dude.
Oh, okay, that's why.
Yeah. Oh, you might know him.
Yeah, it rings a bell. Where was that?
It was down at Cockle Bay.
Cockle Bay Wharf,
Just down there. So, I mean, Vivid Festival's massive. Yeah. It's like 500,000 people go through your stand. So, everything had to be made so that, like, potentially 500,000 people could walk through it and touch it.
That's it.
Which is quite strange.
A little bit durable. You know?
Yeah, durable's the word. Yeah, hoseable. Yeah.
I love it. For an opportunity like that in particular, or even any of these fests, because these are iconic Sydney festivals, they've been going on for quite a few years. So is it more when you get an opportunity to do it, is there a financial incentive to be a part of it, or is it more of a case of you get the opportunity to flaunt your stuff
in the public domain? Stuff that I've done with like Fringe Festival and Trop Fest, it's always just been like, we need this. This is how much we're going to pay you.
Okay.
It's like, cool, great. There's not a lot of... There's not even a lot of sketching usually. It's just like, great, here you go.
Yep.
Vivid Festival, we had to go through an application process to essentially win a grant.
Right.
And the grant is from, you know, the, you know, Sydney Arts, you know. So essentially what they're doing is they're funding you building a thing that you've proven you can build.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is where the team element comes into it.
Yeah.
So we built it in a shipping container.
Oh, cool.
And we just drove it over on a truck and craned it into place. And, you know, the whole thing is that they don't want to give money away for free.
Hmm.
You essentially say, this is where the money's going, and everything has to be safe, everything has to be done properly, installed. And then you can show on the top, this is what we're making.
Yeah.
And I think honesty is always a good policy with that stuff. So ultimately, you get paid for your time, but no one's in a jacuzzi in the back of a Cadillac on the way home from that one.
No one's pocketing all the money and just doing bare minimum.
Yeah, but it's not. You're not being ripped off, and you're not being the old like paid with exposure cliche is a thing that I think most artists know how to avoid.
Mm.
But sometimes, if it's actually a job that you want to do, you might be happy to. I mean, personally for me, I'd rather get paid full price or free. Like, I hate the idea of discounting what I do or making it look cheap. I'd rather help out a mate or something for free than charge them what I would if I was going to go full price.
Yeah, I've seen this. I've seen a lot of people talk about it recently, and something that we've done, as far as discounting and doing sales and things like that, there's a perception out there. And I think for years, like we always, like when we had like leftover merch and stuff that we're trying to get rid of, it's like, oh, sale,
yep,
everything's discounted. And then eventually people just get used to...
You basically create a thing where people wait for discounts. So one of the things that I run on the side of my own, you know, illustration and digital artwork and all of the stuff that I do is I run two brands. So I run... an embroidered patch and pin brand called Death Patches.
Yep.
We make patches for heaps of bands. We make our own like really offensive, rude, antisocial patches, and lots of Hail Satan, We're All Gonna Die stuff. Nice. On there. It's very fun, very metal inspired.
Yeah.
The other one is I've just recently started a brand called Nightcrawler, which is a kids wear cool. a kids wear brand. So, and what I get out of doing stuff like that is like, if I get a shitty email from a client being like, oh, actually, thanks for this artwork, we're not going to use it and we're not going to pay you and blah, 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 like a bad day,
yeah,
I'll just go, you know what? Fuck this. I'm just going to spend the next hour working on a really fucking rude patch, and I'm going to put it out in my brand, and we're going to make them and photograph them and sell them and run this little... and get this little business pumping. And it's a really good outlet for the rage that's like... because it can be quite hard, because if everything that I do is working with someone.
Mm.
Everything that I do is artwork that someone's asked for or waiting for, and everyone's in a hurry and everyone wants it right now and everyone wants it their way, and it can be quite hard working with clients sometimes, especially when it doesn't always happen, but especially if they're creative but they don't have an outlet, they want to get their fingers in the artwork by making changes, and you know, they have a vision and they can't explain it, and it's like they're living through me sort of a thing, you know. And that can be quite hard to work with. So it can be frustrating.
Yeah.
And so the outlet is my own brands. I also sell t-shirts on my website, just like Grim Reapers riding motorbikes and all that kind of stuff. But
I reckon that'd be so hard, because it's that customer service element where you've got to be versatile with the people that you work with.
Totally.
And it wouldn't just be all chilled, laid-back dudes going, oh, man, this artwork's pretty sick. Thanks, man. Here's some money.
Totally.
You've got various personalities, levels of ego and pride, and especially people, as you said, that have got... who are probably frustrated creative people, and they can't
get
it out
which
themselves.
Is totally fine.
Yeah.
But like sometimes like the email on my end can seem a little bit like, oh, come on, man. Like, I'm doing this for you. Come on, this is fun. This is... you know, just take a minute and a deep breath and enjoy what I've done for you, and don't feel the pressure to change it for no reason.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, ultimately, like, changes are changes. That's fine.
Mm.
That's all cool. It's just that, like, the vibe of, you know, an annoying client, which can ruin your day, ultimately.
So your patches...
I don't want to whinge about annoying clients, because...
Do it. No, it's,
you know, yeah.
It's real.
Yeah.
It's part
it happens,
of it. It's part
you know?
Of it. Yeah, that's it. I mean, from the patches and pins point of view, is that successful? And I guess, I mean, whatever definition of success is. But
sure. Like, I mean, when you consider that we started an online business that has now sold thousands and thousands of patches and pins, and we now do custom patches with heaps of bands and heaps of, you know, we just did custom patches for Rose Tattoo for that. Nice. That's coming out with their next album. Every, like, the first 500 albums comes with a patch.
Cool.
So, like, we do stuff like that. That's really fun. And the money all goes obviously into its own bank account. It all gets looked after. I went with my friend Clint. Him and I kind of started it together as just something for fun we wanted to do. He had a couple of ideas. I had a couple of ideas. We just made it, and it's exploded. And it's one of those things that we now spend a lot of time working on. And it's very pleasing to see when it, you know, works well. You put out a new product, and on our phones we get to see when all the sales come through. And you put out a new product and instantly see, you know, 30, 40 orders come through for that product.
That's cool. I mean,
that's awesome.
Is it mainly, just with that in mind, is that mainly Australians that are buying that sort of stuff?
Or almost entirely Americans.
Really?
Yeah. So, like, it's really, really heavy US sales, which is, you know, which is cool.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that, like, we've pretty much sold to every country in the world now.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to think that there's some dude in the middle of Russia wearing a Hail Satan patch that I drew. You know, like, that's cool as fuck. That's awesome.
And for years to come, you'll just be somewhere in the world traveling around and it'll just pop out of nowhere and you'll be like, oh, it'll my God, I made that like 20 years
totally.
ago.
But we run death patches relatively anonymously, in that we don't put our names on things.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone around here knows that we do it, but it's relatively anonymous. So I think it's an added pleasure to see someone walking down the street with the patch, because cool. They don't necessarily know we made it. No. They don't know who we are. And it's probably cooler that way, because it just says death on it, you know, and it's badass.
That's it. And it's probably something about it that's probably appealing to people that buy it as well, because it's not necessarily associated with anything or anyone in particular.
Oh, totally. I mean, I quite enjoy the kind of the psychology behind selling merch. And I know that probably sounds really nerdy, but, like, here's one. If a band has one t-shirt on sale, someone will, like, a fan will walk past that shirt. Ultimately, what you have to do is get their attention while they're walking past the merch desk on their way to find a spot, right? Yep. That's like your moment to get them. And if there's one shirt there and they can see it, they can look at it, and in 1 second they can decide if they want it or not. If you put five shirts up, it's a blur. And if there's if there's a white shirt, a black shirt, a bit of color, a long sleeve shirt, they're going to go, oh, hang on. Well, all right, let's just have a look, because they can't get it all. They can't absorb it all in 1 second. So they'll go over and they'll choose which one's their favorite, and then they'll decide if they want to buy it based on the price.
Yeah.
So that's like a really interesting thing, where it could be the one shirt that they want to buy, but if they walk past and they just decide yes or no, it's different to like almost luring them in.
Yeah.
And by taking your merch, by a band taking their merch seriously, having a range of patches, having an album, a couple of singles, some stickers, some shit on the desk, a couple of different shirts, maybe a hoodie, I don't know, a bag, a tote bag or some shit to put the record in they just bought.
Yep.
It also, like, it makes it, the fans get excited. If that merch changes every time they come to town, it creates this psychology where they go, I have to buy it or I'm going to miss out. I have to go and check it out or I'm going to miss out. But, you know, I think it's a clever thing.
I reckon it's cool. And there's been, you would have seen it over the years, like you play a show with a bunch of bands and there'll be one band that's like, oh, I could be fucked bringing merch tonight.
Oh,
or,
totally.
Or be like, oh yeah, we got this one shirt. And it's like it's almost like an iron-on design on the front of the shirt. And they've got like 10 of them and it's like one color sort of logo and it just looks like dog shit.
Totally.
And then they get pissed when you go and pull out five or six different shirt designs and you got all your CDs lined up and everything like that.
Totally.
But at the other end, and what I've found is that sometimes we've gone from one extreme to the other, where we've had way too much stuff and it does attract people over, but then they look at it and they just glaze over and they just go,
totally. I guess it just comes down to the space. You know, you don't want to be playing like a 300 person room and have half of that room be filled with merch.
I think we've done that.
You got to do it. You got to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's important. You can you can make more money selling merch than you can with your shitty door deal.
Yep.
You know, if there's 100 people watching you, and they've spent $15 to come in, you sell each one of them a t-shirt, you've just made more money out of t-shirts than you have out of the door.
That's it.
Not that everyone's going to buy a t-shirt, but you know, and also like the online side of it as well, everything you take home should be on the website, and you've got to have a system so when they buy the shirt, you go, they get an email that says, look, we're a bunch of drunk musicians, we'll try and get this in the mail by Friday. And when they get it, you want to include some stickers, and like it needs to be in a bag, and then name needs to be spelt right on the front. Give them an order receipt, give them a discount code so they can buy something the next time. Like keep them, and that's where the discount should come in. You should reward loyalty and not make people wait for a sale.
Just lure someone in with a discount.
Totally. If you look at all the brands out there that just do, oh, free shipping this weekend, or 50% off, or oh, it's Tuesday, here's 10%. You just wait. You're just looking for discount codes the whole time because you want to buy something and everyone's a tight ass. But if you're a brand that never does a discount and shit sells out, you create this sort of like this value in that people want to buy it right now or they're going to miss out.
That's it. Yeah.
That's good. And you know what? Let shit sell out. Make people squirm because they can't have it. Because there's nothing more powerful than the shirt you want on a store, on like a web store, being sold out.
I think I've got to convince the rest of the guys to do this, but one tactic that I was going to play, and anyone listening to this, just pretend I didn't say this, but we've started printing lower volumes of stuff anyway because you just don't want to be left with stuff anyway, and limited edition's far better.
Yeah.
If people know that it's not going to be reprinted, if something's hand numbered or whatever it might be, then there's more incentive to just stop sitting on the fence, just make a decision and get it, otherwise you're going to miss out. But even for other stuff, if we've got a surplus, and I would rather give it a time frame, and if it, after, say, 6 months or 3 months or whatever it is that's appropriate, it's gone. It's off the store. And if I've got half a box still sitting around, I'll either use that as freebie somewhere down the track in a different location, or they end up in some rural community somewhere else in Salvos or whatever it might be, because it's the perception of people need to understand that. It's not that you want to punish people for not making a decision straight away, but you want people to understand.
Take it away. It's not on the table anymore. And then in 6 months, anyone who buys our new single gets one of these shirts that we've just found. Oh, we just found a box of them. Whoa, look at that. Oh, shucks.
Done that.
You don't want to trick people. You don't want to lie, but you do want to take your merch seriously. It is like, it's an expensive, I think a lot of fans don't appreciate how much work goes into getting something designed, getting it printed on shirts that people want to wear, and then driving it to the fucking show. That's what I find so bullshit about when venues, and heaps, you probably know heaps of venues that have done this, when you set up there, it's always the bigger venues, when you drive your shit there and you set up the merch desk and they come past and go, oh, by the way, we're taking 20% of your merch sales. Yep. I'll tell you what, you can have 20% of the merch sales if you fucking pay for 20% of the artist and 20% of the production and then 20% of the fucking petrol to drive it here, you motherfucker.
I know. It's,
And it's just some dickhead in a fucking collared shirt being like, oh, 20%. And when I was in bands, we used to have a piece of paper where we'd just write down like, oh, we only sold 3 shirts today. Everyone knows how we've to trick that fucking
Yeah,
we had two
stat sheets.
Yeah.
And so one was a real one that we'd pocket, and the other one was the one that we gave to the venue. Totally. We already had that one filled out at the beginning of the night. It's like, oh, here you go, and here's the $20. And he's like, oh, okay, is that all you sold? You sure? It's like, yeah, it was pretty
slow. Yeah, no one wanted any. We told him that you were taking a cut.
All the guys lining up, by the time they got here, it was too expensive, so they decided not to buy any.
Yeah. How many shirts did you sell tonight, man?
Yeah, fuck.
Piece of shit.
Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah, it's, I think... I mean, I don't know about your artwork, but for me, looking at merch, especially now because everyone's sort of, I don't think it's always the case, but I think people got a shorter attention span because there's always something new coming in all the time.
Totally.
For us, and
people,
I think...
There's ads in people's faces all day long.
And I think for us, from a merch point of view, there has to be an expiry date on something.
Yeah.
And as we said before, like after a certain time, just remove it and let it go. Do you sort of do that with some of your art? I mean, not that you consciously put a physical expiry date on something, but do you sort of...
Do you mean like on like promoting my artwork that I've done in the past?
Anything that you sell, like as far as...
I definitely do. I feel like it's more exciting if it's all fresh. And I also try not to come up with so much stuff that it's always overwhelming and that like there's 100 new things.
Yep.
Just like a new shirt every month or two is pretty good.
Yep.
It also means that I can set myself like a reasonable deadline and go, by the end of the month, I'm going to have drawn... A Reaper riding a motorcycle.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like a nice thing to actually spend a moment treating myself like a client and going, making it important, like actually scheduling that to be done.
Do you have guys or girls that are loyal in the sense that they will buy pretty much everything that you put out?
I definitely see the same names popping up on the orders, and that's nice.
Yeah.
And I try to, wherever possible, make sure I include, you know, some free shit. That's actually one of the cool things about the patches is, like, they're so kind of, like, just easy to throw in. They're not a high-cost product. And if someone's bought a $40 T-shirt and they've paid for postage and they forgot to use the discount code you sent them with their last order, it's like, chuck them a patch, chuck them some stickers, you know?
Yeah, that's it.
Do some free shit. Or, like, even, like, scribble a skull on the receipt. You know, just, like, I love that when I buy something from a store, like another artist, for example, and I get it, and they're like, oh, thanks, Cindy, man, and like, they've drawn, like, a fucking giant coming dick. It's very exciting. Actually, I had a stamp made for my orders that says, thanks, cunt. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I haven't.
So I had, like, a rubber stamp that says, thanks, cunt.
I'll take a photo of that before I go.
I'll stamp your notes. How about that?
Yeah, cool. Yeah,
but I put it up on my site, just being like, anyone who buys a shirt gets a thanks cunt stamp until the ink runs out. Like, do that. And it went bonkers. And I had heaps of bars contacting me to use it as a door stamp.
Really?
Heaps of people like, can I buy the stamp? And I was like, I'm not selling the stamp. Just fuck off. And eventually I caved. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm making them to order. I'm not going and buying a bunch of fucking rude stamps.
You just got a box of thanks cunt stamps.
So I was just sitting around, waiting 6 months. But I put it up and I sold over 100 stamps like over the weekend, and it was very exciting.
That's cool.
Because then, like, posting them all out, and like, it was good. It was satisfying, you know.
Just
it's
like,
pleasing. Every now and again, I bump into pals who are like, "Yeah, you know what? I pay my bills with that." Like, I, you know, I fill out the form and I stamp it and I send it back.
Fuck, that's so good.
It's good.
It's awesome. So good.
And the places like the Lansdowne use it as their entry stamp.
Yeah,
which is pretty cool.
That's so cool. I think, I know, same sort of thing. Like, I'll order something from somebody, might be a band or something online, and even the acknowledgement of my name being written with a pen on the invoice or the little note that comes with it or whatever,
yeah,
that's enough to get some sort of little adrenaline rush where I go, ooh,
totally.
Like, they've actually had to write my name and think of me while they're doing it. And I
totally
think if it's that simple, then
well, I guess it's like that. There's like a whole thing behind, like, you could go really deep on all this with like the tribe mentality of, like,
yep,
you know, when you wear your favorite band shirt, you know that people look at you and they know what kind of a person you sort of roughly are.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm wearing a white bootleg Slayer t-shirt.
Yeah, nice.
I don't think Slayer have ever made a white t-shirt in their lives. But China definitely did. Look at this.
Get on the Chinese. It's pretty rad.
It's pretty
cool.
It's awesome.
Very cool.
But like, I don't know. I think that the tribe thing is a big thing. So when you see, like, a, you know, band puts out a new shirt or a new whatever, you walk down the street wearing that shirt.
It's like a sporting team thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, you feel like colours. You belong, you know, and especially with something like metal or fuck whatever, you know, typically the people who are into that kind of shit are pretty, like, I'm burping all this beer. Introverted, lonely types anyway, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, the sense that you can walk into a bar and see the other metalhead there and be like, g'day, mate. You know,
yeah,
give him a,
yeah, give
him
the
a
nod.
A fucking, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I acknowledge you. Yeah, you're all right.
Yeah. Talk to you later, mate. You know?
After I've had like 20 beers and I've got the courage.
Totally. We'll go outside and we'll whinge about fucking Metallica or something and it's going to be great.
It's original conversation.
Maybe I should do it. Do you reckon I should do it? It should have been Lars' shirt. Is that too controversial?
Oh, do it. Fuck. Someone, and I'm, well, there
he's a piece of shit. He's a fucking piece of
I
shit.
I just think, look, I've got no opinion of these things. I'm not an opinionated person whatsoever. I'm always very neutral.
Yeah.
But I think you definitely need to play on the whole Metallica controversies and also Metallica versus Megadeth. I think you should do that.
Totally.
Because that, like, if you ever get a hit of adrenaline from little notifications on social media, all you need to do is just ask that question.
Totally.
You could have a friends list full of non-metalheads and somehow you'll still get 50 million comments
and
interactions and everything on that status. So I think if you did a shirt that...
Can I tell you, we had a gag here at the studio, which was every week we would all tweet at David Mustaine a strange question, because he put up a thing one time saying, like, I want to get to know you guys and I want you to get to know me. Shoot me a question. And I'd be like, what's your favorite topping on a hot dog? And, like, No response. And one of the guys, I can't remember what it was. It was like, what's your favorite chocolate bar or some shit? It was like something stupid. It was something fucking stupid. Anyway, you got a response.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. We've all got bells on our desk here.
Yeah, I can see them. Yep.
We all ring the bells.
When you get a response?
No. They're not Dave Mustaine bells. They're just like a something really good happened bells. You know, they're like desk bells. You know, ding, 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 ding.
That's cool.
It's very good. We also do it when the mailman comes because, you know.
Well, it's always exciting when the mailman comes. Yeah. Well, as long
they've
as
come all the way
bells.
Up the stairs.
Do they?
They yeah. often they know, you know, they know which ones are which, so they come around to our desk.
Oh,
it's pretty good.
That's cool.
They get a bell.
That's mad. That's really good.
Yeah, you got to look after the mailman or he'll steal our shit.
Nightcrawler.
Yes.
I didn't even realize this until about a week ago, and I think I saw either a post from yourself or I might have just been stalking, but I was like, oh, fuck, you got a kid's clothing line
now? It's brand new, yeah.
It's fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. It's pretty different.
Yeah.
The whole idea of it was I've got heaps of rowdy, long-haired, tattooed, buff-haired mates who listen to metal, drink beer, talk a lot of shit, have unpaid parking tickets, irresponsible human beings who are creating small versions of themselves. And I've gone to a few, like, you know, first birthdays, a few, yeah, like, kind of baby shower kind of things. And it's like, you know, if someone's like a rad old school metal dude, you know, I'd like to give them something better than a Kmart flanny. So I just thought, you know what, I should be making, like, one or two of these little things for kids. And then I was like, actually, it should just be its whole own thing. Cause fuck it, you know, kids need rad shit. And I actually couldn't find very much rad stuff that looked like it was professionally done. There's lots of crap.
Yeah.
There's lots of like handsome, like dad or mommy's little girl kind of fucking shit. I was just like, you know what? Let's make some badass shit. Let's give kids some cred and like not do the, I'm a dumb little kid stuff. Let's do, you know, let's focus on like rock and roll songs and just make some rad kid stuff.
That's cool.
And so I've put a lot of time, a lot of money into it, and it's really nice that it's only been around for, so I've only launched about a month ago. The response has been really, really good. Like already restocking stuff, like already like working on the next designs, getting it all ready. Yeah, and Christmas is coming up, so I think that'd be really cool.
Fucking get all over that.
Yeah, mate.
Oh, so good.
Very
so good.
Very pleasing.
What's, because there's a whole bunch of, as you said before, like music references, puns, and things like that. What are some of the ones that are sort of popular at the moment?
There's the two baby bottles cheersing, and it says "staying up late." The idea that two little kids would be staying up past bedtime drinking their milk. I've got "Tie Your Mother Down." The Queen reference from "Day at the Races." We've got "Big Bad Wolf."
Yeah,
we've got "Home Wrecker." We've got a couple of rad things. We've got like a tote bag that's for mums, and the idea is that like holding your shit while you struggle through life is the kind of the selling point of the tote bag. We've got an alphabet flag, like a big tapestry for the wall, like, you know, for the kids' room. And the idea is to ultimately have a number of those so that, you know, the kids' room doesn't have to be just a bunch of dumb shit, you know. We can actually put some like really rad, it's all kind of like quite 70s inspired, but I guess like with like a bit of metal in it.
Yeah.
It's all black and white, which is cool.
That's awesome.
So it's all, by being black and white, I also feel like it's relatively unisex. It's not like, you know, pink is for girls, blue is for boys.
Yeah.
Which is not, I don't want it to be about like that, any of that sort of shit. I just want it to be like little tiny band t-shirts, you know.
You get a kid and that's it.
Totally.
It doesn't matter. That's,
totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Were there any particular things that you had, or you weren't aware of and you now are producing children's clothing as opposed to like, Dude's t-shirts and Gildan t-shirts.
Fire safety. I've got to learn all about like the safety of kids' stuff. It has to be like,
also like fire retardant.
It has to be made out of like really nice organic cotton. You know, no one wants to put their kids in like toxic fucking flammable shit. So everything, all the kids' stuff, especially like the 0 to 12 months stuff, has almost like a chemical resin in it that actually makes it slightly flame safe.
Yeah, right.
Fire safe. I guess the idea, so here's the idea behind it. You're some like majillionaire dude with a fireplace and you're off probably playing pool or something with your mates. Meanwhile, your little baby is next to the open fireplace and a little flicker of flame would come out and land on the garment and you don't want that to go.
Yeah.
So that's the idea. And the flames, like the resin that's in the teas is obviously non-toxic.
Yep.
And it's also only designed to last like a year or two. So like it washes out. Yep. So I mean, I had to study all this shit. You got to have like special legal tags and stuff on them and everything. So I've done everything properly. I've done everything the right way, but I had to learn a lot.
Would your cost per unit compared to like your typical band t-shirt be a bit higher because of all these extra things you got to consider?
Yeah, definitely. And you also have to include like, you don't have to, but we include a tag that explains why it's done that way.
Yep.
And what the material is and how to wash it and, you know, all that kind of stuff, which I think is just a nice touch.
Yeah.
It's good.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. How long from sort of idea, concept to actually launching, what was the period of time?
Probably a year.
Yeah.
And that probably sounds like a really long amount of time, but when you consider that I was working on all my own shit all the time and trying to fit this in, which is essentially like just a project that's all for me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm glad I got it done in a year. It was good. And I've got it done, obviously, launched it in the middle of the year now. So coming up to Christmas, we've got some cool shit for Christmas and summer and all that sort really of stuff. Cool.
Do you do cross promo between, I mean, I know that you mentioned before with the patches and everything, it's easy to be able to throw that in with other stuff, but do you do, or have you thought about cross promo between the different things that you're involved with, or did you try and keep
a little bit? I've thought about it. I think it's all, I think one day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm open to it. Yeah. I just haven't thought of the right thing yet.
Yeah.
I think the best thing I can do for any of the brands like Death or Nightcore is just to let them be their own thing and
and to
not like worry. They're
not relying on the other thing to keep them going
or
whatever.
Totally. I don't ever want it to be safe or to be doing things that are predictable. I'd rather keep them fun and keep people a bit on their toes. I really want to do a fuck the police baby onesie. I think that'd be so good. I've had it on the list. I've said it to a few people and I get mixed responses. Some are like, oh, nah, that's weird. And it's like, well, it's a baby. I mean, it's not going to do anything.
I'm sure you get a few orders from the United States. We'll see how we go. I'm sure.
I got to do a wee. I got to do a piss real bad.
Yeah, go.
Can we have a 5-second piss break?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you want to come for a piss break?
Sword fights?
Yeah. Game on.
Let's do it. All right. Yeah, I'm squirming. All right. And we're back.
Hello. Don't you feel better?
Several kilos lighter.
Yeah, it's like a several reset. Several
litres lighter.
I'm a whole new man.
Oh, speaking of, saw your wallpaper downstairs in the toilet.
It's a rude wallpaper, isn't it? It's like 100 nude ladies.
They look like they're from the bookstore on King Street, the old bookstore that's open till 11 p.m. Yeah.
It's just piles of books. I don't think they've like even got a shelf in there, do they?
No, I don't think they know what they've got. No,
totally.
But I remember like there was some old porno mags that were right at the front door when you walked in. They looked like very similar to some of those pictures.
I think they're old Soul records where they've like...
Oh, really?
Yeah, they've got like funny, you know, record names on them.
That's a different world.
I'm not usually in there long enough to read them all. I just have a giggle at a couple of them and then I'm out.
Yeah. Anyone else who's down there for a long period of time is like, come on, guys.
Yeah. Come on. Come on, mate. What are you doing? Hurry up. Chop, chop.
So, got Nightcrawler. Is it Death Patch?
Death Patches, yeah.
Death Patches. Your own stuff as well. There's all these different things you got on the go.
Yep.
Is there a strategic sort of plan behind it all to create as many different things as possible, or is it just a case of when you see an opportunity and an idea, you just jump on it?
I guess that's the thing. Like I'm very proactive. I hate the idea of being a person that sits around talking about things and not doing them. I do come up with heaps of ideas. Most of them are stupid drunk ideas, but like
me too.
To come up with an idea that I think is good and to write it down and work on it and spend some time brainstorming it and to have it in the back of my mind and to slowly see it come to life is really good. It's a nice feeling. A really nice feeling. And I feel like when you're a freelance illustrator, like I am, I look at all of the work that's coming up and I go, what if one day there's no more emails? What if one day, like, something happens? It means that I've created a bit of a safety net of a brand or something like that that I can put a lot more time into. Or if it goes really well, I can justify spending more time on it. And it's basically just like creating a small business, but on the side and giving it room to build organically and be its own thing without putting too much time or too many eggs in that basket. Being fun and impulsive is fun. It's quite rewarding, you know. So
I just know like a lot of, don't know, like graphic artists and people that are sort of, that they live that stereotypically freelance lifestyle, but they're typically sort of got the tunnel vision and dealing with one thing that they're good at and that's it, and they'll just stick with that. And then when things dry up, they'll just whinge and just stay in that. They won't look elsewhere.
I think the dry up thing, the like the fear of no more work coming up is, it's not a real, like, I've never really had that, except I can totally relate to it in that I don't think it would take much for a style to become old. Mm. And it could just be that, like, I'm influenced by things, people might be influenced by what I'm doing, suddenly it just becomes like a fad, and then I'm the only one left doing it. And that would be a thing that's out of my control.
Yeah.
And so ultimately I think you're responsible for your own style evolving and, you know, not just doing the same thing over again or doing anything too safe or expected.
So apart from the kids' clothing brand that you've launched now, and so it's fresh, is there anything else that you're thinking of long term, or are you sort of more of a case of let's look at the next 6 months?
I'm good for now. Like I'm not looking to start so many things that it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
I think the Nightcrawler kids wear thing is relatively niche, and so is Death. Yeah. Death Patches is very niche in that, like, you're really looking at dudes with battle vests and like grubby motorbike dudes and, you know, guys with a bit of fancy denim. Like that's the dude that wears Death.
Mm.
You want the guy that wears his rad leather jacket on the train and upsets the old lady next to him.
Nice.
That's what we're looking for.
That's
but
it.
That said, like, I feel like, I don't know, I think if I started 100 different brands with different names and purposes, it would be a bit weird.
Yeah.
Whereas these two I actually give a shit about. Like, I'm not just doing them to sell out. Like, all of the money from Death goes back into more Death.
Yeah.
All of the money from Nightcrawler goes back into more Nightcrawler. Like, I'm not actually pocketing money. What I'm doing is building a business, using itself, which I think is really good. Like, it's a really satisfying way to kind of build that up.
Absolutely. And, you know, as time moves on, something works, something doesn't, then you adjust and you tweak as needed. So if one of your ventures doesn't work, then you can either tweak that or you can just can it, and then you can just put everything together into one of the existing brands that you've got and just keep going.
Yeah,
that's cool. I mean, even just that example of having the dude sort of with the jacket pissing off the old granny. You need to be able to get the granny wearing the patch as well. Just the same sort of death patch thing.
There's an art to being a little bit. I don't know what the word is. It's that, like, I get it with my artwork all the time. It's not for everybody.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things, is that, like, a lot of the people that hire me have seen my style. They've seen what I've done. They know that I'm okay with reapers and skulls and fucking dead shit and bones and all that kind of shit. And, like, but I think even though I make it playful and friendly, It's not for everybody, and I don't.
But I think that's why you're successful at it as well.
It's niche.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
It has to be niche. I think when people try to please too many people, and it just becomes bland.
Yeah.
And you're trying to win over weight. I mean, I remember years ago we were trying to like win over the different sections of rock and metal and whatever, and it was just too hard because people love what they love.
Totally.
And you don't need to have 500,000 people
that
are loving what you do. You need like 100 diehards that will buy anything that you release.
Yeah,
and then
totally.
You need 1,000.
What's that? It's like, what's the theory? Like 1,000 fans?
1,000
Isn't
fans.
That, that's the thing,
yeah,
right?
That's
yeah,
it.
Totally.
And with the power of the internet, you can drill right down to that niche person.
Totally. I think you got to find a niche, whether it's like really niche or just a relatively open niche. I think, like, you got to find a thing that people can relate to, but also a thing that kind of helps them find, I don't know, you just create like an expectation.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think you should never be pretending to be part of a niche. Like, you know, like I was saying, like the patches are upsetting someone. Like we don't want to pretend to be dudes that like patches. We like patches.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be a dude that pretends to like cool kids wear stuff. I want to give that to my mates because I reckon it's cool.
Right.
Like, you know, I reckon like the whole thing of like finding the right niche. If a dude in a suit is trying to sell a patch that says we're all going to die with an upside down cross on it, everyone's going to go, "What are you doing?"
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just, you know what? It's exactly the same with my illustration stuff, because when a bar hires me to come and do a mural on the wall of their beer garden, and they may have never met me before, it might be through email or Instagram or whatever. I think the fact that I can turn up and I'm a grubby looking tattooed hairy thing is what they expect. Yeah. If I was trying to please them or trying to put on some sort of show or anything, like they want to be able to go out to, on the weekend and go, oh, we hired this artist who came and did some shit on the walls, and you know they want the feeling, you know, they want to feel that whole thing. And so like, I think like when you work for yourself, your brand is everything. It's how you shake hands with someone when you say hello. It's how you answer the phone. And I think if you spend too much time worrying about pleasing people or, you know, being professional or anything like that, you can actually lose the edge that you've got.
I think people can cut through the bullshit pretty quickly as well, like more so than ever.
Totally.
Because everyone's trying to get your attention. You're flicking through feeds on whatever social media platform you're on, and people can sniff what's genuine and what's not, and more so than ever before. I think people still can bullshit. But I think in the end, the people that cut through the noise are the guys that are doing something that exudes like this genuine love for what they're
totally.
About. It's that enthusiasm, that energy, that weird energy that just cuts through everything.
Enjoying it is a huge part of it. I think if you don't enjoy it, and if you're not positive about the whole process of your job, like the fact that I actually enjoy sitting at my desk, listening to music and drawing is a huge part of it. Yeah. If the only part of it that I enjoyed was the finished product or the money or the whatever, it wouldn't be the same. I think if you're gonna really quit your job and work on something for the rest of your life, potentially,
yep.
You got to enjoy the act of making it, you know, which I'm sure like that's the kind of like the carpentry, you know, like the slow motion shot of sanding the wood back or whatever, yeah. You know, like you want to feel like that when you're in your craft. You need to enjoy that moment, or else you're going to end up 5, 10, 20 years later going, fuck, what am I doing?
Yeah, that's right. And people will sniff that out before you even realize
you're
having that moment where you go, what have I done with my life? And,
totally.
And by that stage, everyone's disappeared by that point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's cool.
But I mean, like what I was saying about like the whole brand thing, like it's just one of those things where you end up just becoming what you want to, I don't know how to explain it. You can make as much noise with the clients that you say no to as you can with the jobs you take on. So yeah. Like you end up, like whatever work you put out is the work people will hire you to do. So if you're putting out really fun t-shirts with bars, with brewery connections or band t-shirts or whatever, other bands are going to want you to do t-shirts. Like people will hire you to do what they see. They're not going to go, oh, he's done this, maybe he can do this. No one really expects people to do things they've never shown that they do. And there's 100 people who already do that, you know. So say like someone wants a mural of some abstract artwork, some patterns or some, you know, it could be really amazing, sharp work. They're not going to look at me and go, oh, maybe he can do that. They're going to ask the guy that does that. Yeah. And there's 100 of them. Yeah. There's 1,000 of them, you know. So like that's the thing. So like that's, I don't know. That's why I put out the work that I do, and why I say yes to the jobs that I do, and why I say no to the jobs that I do, because I think that's...
Yeah, how often do you say no to things?
All the time. Yeah. It could be for anything as simple as, like, I don't have time,
yeah.
Where, you know, if someone needs something really fast and I'm not available, like, that's that. Like, I don't want to disappoint them.
Yeah.
I do say no to stuff that stinks.
Yeah.
The other day I got hired... I didn't get hired. I got an email about doing a t-shirt for West Connects, like a...
Oh, really?
A big fucking road that's destroying half of Sydney.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm not sure how evil they really are. In my mind, they're pretty evil. And I just wrote back an email going like, hey, man, like, no disrespect, but like, I don't want to do this at all. I'm not touching this with a fucking 10-foot pole.
Yeah.
But thank you for thinking of me. Very flattering.
Yeah.
Best of luck. You know, and that's the thing where like, if you were new to the game... If you were fresh and you were looking for work, that'd be the kind of thing where you might take that job on going, it's flattering to be asked to do something. You know, similar to being in a band, like when you first start a band and someone goes, oh, you know what, we're doing a special event at this thing and we want you to play. You're like, oh, someone wants us to play. Whereas when you've been doing it for a few years, you go, no.
Doesn't align in with what we're doing. Long-term strategy, image, blah, blah,
totally.
Blah. Yeah. Oh, wow, West Connects, eh? Fucking hell.
Oh, you know.
How funny. I would have laughed if I would have saw some of your artwork.
Oh, imagine. With that. I mean, you know what the other thing is? That they would have, and this is, I'm just predicting the future here. If I had done something, it would have been on a press release going, we've connected with local artist Cindy Sin to create this artwork and this t-shirt and this fucking whatever. And like that just, that for my...
This is just a sign of acceptance that the local community is in acceptance of what
we're
doing.
Yeah, you know, that's how they would have spun it. They don't need t-shirts. No. They would have, they just want a, they want a connection. They want a collaboration. Yeah. They want to be a part of it. And it's flattering that they asked. It's flattering that they see that I do have that connection with the community here. But at the same time, it's like, no thanks.
Yeah, I think the whole saying no thing's really underrated. And I think a lot of people panic in thinking that if they say no, then you're going to miss out on so much. And totally. As you said, depending on where you are on
how you say no
of events.
How you say no is important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you don't want to go, you don't want to get the email from a you know, say I get a band contacting me about doing some artwork for them and I don't like the band, you know. If I write back going, fuck off, you losers, like, that's one thing. But if I write back going, sorry, guys, I'm booked out. I'm booked out for the next few months. I can't take this on. It's not necessarily untrue, but it's, it just means that I'm not hurting anyone's feelings. It doesn't get personal.
That's
and
it.
And like, I never want it to be personal. Like, the fact that I don't like their music doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them.
Yeah.
Like, it just...
It's not your preference.
Just means I'm not putting my skulls on their fucking shirts.
That's it.
You know, get someone else to do it.
And just, you just hope that they don't sit there for 4 months and,
totally.
And then call you back and go, oh, hey, are you free?
A funny thing that happens, actually, is after doing, like, a big job, a big, especially with bands, the echo effect of the... I'm not going to... I don't know how to describe without being negative, like a copycat band or like a, we're like them, we want that again.
Yep.
I did a tour poster and t-shirts with Parkway Drive last year. I got so many emails from hardcore bands being like, dude, awesome, great, we want this, can we get this, can we get this, can we get this? And it's like, man, if I do that for you, it's going to look exactly like these other 10 bands have just contacted me. And it's like, I'd rather do something completely different for you. And that kind of scares them off because you're like, I don't want to just repeat what I did with Parkway Drive.
That's it. I mean, Parkway Drive for a lot of those bands is the mold, the template for
totally.
Success.
What did Parkway Drive do? Let's do that.
Exactly. You know? Let's not even modify it because it's working for them. So surely it's going to work for us.
Totally. It's hard to generalize, but you got to generalize. Yeah. But like, it's funny, like doing the Misfits poster, I got a bunch of emails from bands who were in that kind of like psycho goth kind of Rob Zombie kind of, you know, that sort of style, even the psychobilly kind of stuff, you know. So a bunch of that, which is good.
Yeah,
it's always funny.
Oh fuck me.
At least the thing with like the Misfits and all that kind of stuff is that there's like a really, really graphic style that comes with the band. When when I imagine Kiss, I imagine all of the Kiss artwork and the Kiss image. When I imagine there's a lot of bands out there that when I imagine them, I just imagine like their dingy promo photo, or especially local bands, you know, you just imagine their like crap font and their crap everything. And there's some bands out that have really nailed the image, and they change it all the time, and it's exciting.
Oh, absolutely. Shit, hey, well, I'm feeling this beer. All I want is more. And we're literally sitting in a brewery.
You're in luck. There's more.
Oh, but I've got to drive. That's the worst thing. I'm just eyeing off that glass of water.
I'll give you a tinny to have when you get home. How about
that? Oh, a roadie.
Yeah. Not a roadie. You can't have it in the
car. Well, it's just one to carry. Yeah, true. Oh, okay. Anyway.
You can have it in the car. It has to be sealed the whole time. And when you turn the ignition off.
And keys out of the ignition. Yes. Then crack it.
Yeah. Crack it while opening the door.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm going to chuck some links up so people can check out what you do. Christmas is coming up for Nightcrawler.
Yeah, buy my shit.
Yep. So anyone with little spawns.
Yep. I'll have some fresh shirts up on my site.
Yep.
Death Patches has a whole bunch of fun new shit coming out. Yep. And if you want patches made, hit us up.
Cool.
We just like to help people. So let's do it.
Okay, that's a good day. We're off.
Great.
Ta-ta.
See ya.
See ya. Thanks, everyone. If you want to reach out to Cindy, you want any work done, you got any ideas that you want to have visualized into something, I'm doing well today, you can go and check out all of Cindy's businesses that he's involved with, his contact details. Everything is over in the show notes at andysocial.net, so you can go and check that out and reach out to him and let him know what you thought of this particular podcast episode, and hopefully, you know, he might be able to help you out with something. So everything's over there. As I said, if you've got a little tot, little kid, a little spawn, you can dress them up in some cool threads, by going over to the Nightcrawler website as well. So everything's over at andysocial.net. Go over there, check it out. Nice and easy. Okay, before I wrap it up, I'm recording this intro and outro at the Berry Showgrounds on the south coast of New South Wales. And the reason for me doing this is because I couldn't record these intros and outros from home because I've got this loud cockatiel, Larry Bird, or Burb, that just keeps interrupting and wanting to be a part of the podcast. So maybe you might have him on as a guest down the track. But I am getting awfully distracted by a bunch of caravans off in the distance, people walking around an old grandstand, birds flying around as well. So I can't even escape the birds here. And so my train of thought keeps wandering off into the distance. But anyway, that was a little bit of interesting information for you all. And if you're still listening, geez, I applaud you. So before we wrap it up, as always, if you want to support the podcast, you can do so via all the social media hoo-ha, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, wherever else, LinkedIn. I'm doing a little bit of posting over there as well. So if you can like something, if you see the post pop up in your newsfeed, please give it a little like, a little comment, a little tag, a little love heart, retweet, whatever it might be. I know that sometimes you might not feel compelled to click on something, but if you do, that is like cocaine for the social media algorithms, and they push that forth to hundreds and thousands of more people out there in cyberspace. So those little clicks do wonders for this podcast. So thank you so much for those people that do those little things. It's really, really cool. If you want to review the podcast, you can go over to Apple Podcasts and review over there. Now, I must make a really quick mention because I've meant to do this on the last several episodes and keep forgetting. Now, what I've found out, and I didn't realize this, is that depending on the country that you're based in, you have a different view of ratings and reviews on iTunes. So if you're in the US, there are you get a completely different view of who rates and reviews on my podcast, as opposed to somebody in Australia, as opposed to somebody in Japan, in the UK, in New Zealand, in Germany, wherever. So what I had to do the other day is go through and change the location address in my iTunes podcast link to see if there was any other reviews anywhere. And lo and behold, I found all of these reviews, reviews from the UK, from the US, from all these different countries. And I felt really bad because I haven't acknowledged any of them. And not that I'm going to do it today because I don't have them written out in front of me, but I just wanted to say thank you for my listeners abroad that are leaving reviews for me, because I'm not seeing them. When I log into my app on my phone, I just see the ones that are through, the Australian little URL location link. And so I see a few from other countries, but more or less, I'm only seeing the ones in Australia. So I was wondering for a while there, I was getting crickets going, there's nothing happening here. But no, actually, there are a few of you guys doing amazing things for me. So thank you so much. And I will plug those and do shout outs at a later date. But I thought I'd just acknowledge that to make sure that you guys know that I have seen them. And it's very much appreciative. So thank you very, very much. Now, in addition to reviewing, if there's other functions out there, other podcast players that you can leave a little rating or a review, please do so. That's amazing if you can do it. As always, the Amazon portal link over at andysocial.net you can use if you shop on Amazon. Please click on that link first. I get a small cut of whatever you choose to purchase. And I also have the paypal.me. So if you want to send me a dollar or 50 cents or $500 million, you can certainly do so via the paypal.me link on the andysocial.net website. Very, very easy to use, especially if you already have a PayPal account, but you don't even need a PayPal account. You just chuck a figure in there and then you work out where that money's going to come from. And then I get a little alert on my phone and I get very, very happy. I start cheering. I do a little happy dance. Anyway, that's enough of that. Okay, guys, far out. What an outro. If you're still listening, far out. Amazing. Next week, next Thursday, 8 p.m. Sydney time, I'll have episode 103 of the podcast up for you guys. I'm going to keep them coming. I've got several in the bank so far. I also have another venture coming out in the coming coming weeks to the next month or so. So stay tuned for that. Another podcast, maybe something on the side, a little bit of a different topic. Anyway, enough of that. Far out. Shut up, Andy. All right, next week, Thursday, 8 p.m. Sydney time. See you there. Yo!
Yeah.